point of view, or are they, you know, a front for somebody? Are they promoting fake, you know, news or whatever? You know, is there any truth to what they're saying? But assuming that it could be a dialogue between multiple people, that surely will come out in the dialogue. So I don't think there's any problem with including that. And of course, you know, it's I think programmers should be able to criticize each other, as long as the criticism doesn't devolve into name calling and using bad language and so forth on the air. But that's about it for me right now.
Thank you. Jim Dignam.
Well, our mission statement is key to everything. I once was in London and I met some guy who teaches media, and he memorized the mission statement. He regurgitated it to me as if it was the Bible. We frankly have retreated from the last two paragraphs of the mission statement and its true meaning and effects, because you read about how Lou Hill was influenced by ideas. He was very much influenced by the philosopher, political philosopher, social philosopher Dewey, who came up with a whole notion of critical thinking and critical inquiry. So I would argue that the station and the kind of content that's on the air in many of the stations essentially, you know, does not have debate, does not have discourse, does not make that a key component of it. And the idea of information from other sources to allow you to deal with antagonisms, it does that to some extent. But then, of course, when it deals with issues like, for example, how do we deal with the Trump phenomena? I would say that stations in general have not necessarily been as acute as they could be. And one part of the mission statement that really has fallen flat is the question of arts. That's the big weakness. Thanks.
Thank you. Martha Rowan.
Yes, I think it's very important for us to have a range of opinions. And I think that's that, as I've said, I think that's one of the things that can help get more engaged listenership. I think it, I think the idea of people, of hosts or disagreeing with each other would be a very positive thing. Obviously, I agree with Kay Williams, and I think it almost goes without saying that if things were to devolve into nasty name calling and bad language, that would be you know, not acceptable. But that's not what I would expect from people we would have on a WBAI. It's hardly known as a shock jock station. But I think the idea of having really strong debates, not just polite minor disagreements, but strong debates about issues where there are really serious disagreements, is an excellent idea. I do think that, obviously, I agree with Jim that the idea that as far as diversity of programming goes, it should include other things besides just talk shows. But to the extent that we're talking about that sort of thing, talk shows and things like that, the more diverse, the more controversial even from one to the other, the better, as far as I'm concerned.
Thank you. Nissan Pitcher.
What was her name? I'm sorry, what was her name?
Martha Rowan.
Thank you.
Nissan Pitcher.
Greetings. And that being a political organizer, I too have had many different conversations with many sides of the aisle, and it is crucial in order to have a healthy discourse. It's fundamental that we have discussions on that which we don't agree on, that we don't see eye to eye, so that we can learn from each other. As long as it's done in a respectful and healthy and intellectual way, it bears fruit of the future to learn from each other and know that we are all limited in our points of view. So we may miss things others can see. And we only can learn where the truth is by seeing all sides. Of course, the problem is now is that our discourse has been hijacked as respectful discourse has been turned into battlegrounds as language has been now used as a tool of destruction. Our language is being weaponized in order to divide us and to dumb us down. And what we need to do is call that out and learn to fight back for our intellectual criticisms and learn to not be caught up in these cancel.
You got muted, Nissan. Okay. All right. So I think you finished. So, all right. Jack DePalma, you're next.
Yeah, Jim Dingman, was that John Dewey? And I tend to agree with Nissan. There's a lot of bad faith in these quote-unquote debates. You know, I assert. But am I telling you the truth when I assert? You know, the sky is green in the afternoon. Yesterday I saw it myself. The point is that honest debate is really not on the radio station, as was originally said. And Kay is right. We need critical thinking. Jim Dingman is right. That's what made WBAI so engaging. We had honest people talking honest issues about real serious social issues in our society. Peace, number one, I believe, was the big thing. But the Vietnam War made a strident and vocal, peaceful step forward. Howard Zinn, another example of great WBAI radio. It's not debate. It's more likely honest messages that haven't been revealed or respected in other media because it's for money. And the money won't tell you about the native people, and the money won't tell you about the political prisoners. The money won't tell you about the anti-war. That's how they make their money. So they won't tell you about the climate is changing. They won't tell you, you know, there are problems with, you know, nuclear bombs, spending all your money on, you know, half your money is being spent on war and the other half money isn't being spent on healthcare. We live in a country full of problems and we're very rich, but we also have very, very big problems clarifying and talking about our real problems. So that's what Pacifica is necessary for. That's why honest debate is needed. Kay, I agree with you. Nissan, I agree with you. Jim, I agree with you. We need WBAI. Otherwise, we don't even have honest discussion about important issues. Thank you.
Thank you. We're getting a little bit of background noise, and that sometimes interferes with the ability to hear who's speaking. So if you're not speaking at the moment, it helps to mute, and if necessary, we'll mute you. So Matthew Reese, you're next. Matthew is with us, I think. All right. I'm just trying to see if Matthew dropped off. All right. We can come back to Matthew in a moment. So James Sagerton, you've joined us as a candidate, but you joined us late, so you didn't hear the question. So the question is the name Pacifica has does indicate the fact that this station network was founded by pacifists, those people who don't believe in fighting wars. But the mission statement also talks about diverse voices and varied sources not commonly brought together, and it speaks of studying various antagonisms. So with diverse voices and shows, our hosts are going to disagree. What do you think can or should be done when that happens, including whether show hosts should be able to critique and criticize one another? James Sagerton, and then you have 2 minutes.
Yeah, thank you, Michael. I'm sorry, I did not hear exactly when what happens when... What is it that happens that we're addressing?
You can listen to this. This is the one of.
Okay. All right. were saying that,
you don't have to repeat the whole thing. I just missed a little bit of the part of the question.
Okay.
Toward the end.
Although Pacifica means we're a station of pacifists, there's also diverse views and, an invitation to study antagonisms. So people are going to disagree, because they have different opinions. And what do you think should be done when we have show hosts, with different points of view, and they might be allowed to critique or criticize each other or not?
Okay, that's an interesting question. I hope you can hear me okay. My connection is not good. I'm up in the Poconos in Pennsylvania, from where, by the way, we can hear WBAI. Well, of course we have to have diverse viewpoints. Personally, I think debate is good. There was a clash a while back between Gary Knoll, who had been opining about, what was it he was talking about? wasn't intersectionality. It was, critical race theory. And some people took exception to that, and they were kind of cross-talking at each other from their platforms of their shows. And then we tried to arrange a debate, and it didn't happen. But debate is good radio. That's part of what makes all of this right-wing talk radio interesting to people. They beat each other up sometimes. They yell, they fight. I'm not saying we should do that kind of thing, but debate is good radio. It makes for interest. So I think it would be a very good thing for people to interact from different shows on different forms and on, either on their own show or
you started to break
a spare platform.
You started.
If I break up, just let me know and cut me off. But yeah, debate would be great.
All right. Thank you.
And, can you hear me still?
Yes, we can hear you now.
Okay, I want to say quickly that as we saw when public television and public radio took up our model of listener sponsorship that Pacifica invented back in the 1940s, they drifted towards a people's kind of an attitude in their broadcasting, more quote-unquote liberal, if you will, more to the left. Until the 1994 Congress was taken over by the Republicans, they came in and did a number on that.
Hi.
But okay, very good. I'll stop.
Thank you. All right, I want to check in. We are having candidates answer questions, and we were just having a question answered. If you are here and a candidate that we didn't know about, I know Tom Morata just arrived, and Tom Morata is a candidate. But if you did not answer the question because we didn't know you're a candidate, would you please let us know? Do we have another candidate? Also, Matthew Reese, I don't know if you're back and able to talk to us. All right. So, Tom, can you hear us all right?
Yes, I can.
All right. You just arrived, so you didn't hear the question. There's a Broadway performer or clown, Abner the Eccentric, who does a sort of comedy routine about this when people are arriving late and you start the show over again. But I'll tell you what the question is that people are answering. You're going to have 2 minutes to answer. So the question is, Pacifica is named Pacifica because it was founded by pacifists. So that indicates people who don't want to go to war. But the mission statement talks about diverse voices, varied sources. And with those diverse voices and views, we're going to get shows and hosts that are going to disagree. Now, what do you think can be done when we have shows that disagree, including whether show hosts should be able to critique and criticize one another. So go ahead, Tom, you've got 2 minutes.
I think we should definitely have that open discussion, even though we name Pacifica, that people of all opinions can air their opinions. And I think that would be very necessary. The thing is, yes, but I don't criticizing people, other hosts, whether it be on BAI or any other, that wouldn't come up to nothing good. But definitely have an open debate is necessary, and you can get the best arguments out of both sides. And I think that would actually sort of contribute to the Pacifica mission, having all sides air their issues and let them tear each other's arguments apart. I think that is definitely a good thing. Should they allow people that with diverging opinions on being a pacifist, yes, they should, and they should confront each other and let the best man win on that.
Thank you. So I don't think that we have any other candidates who have not yet addressed that question. To remind everyone, or if you haven't heard it for the first time, we are taking questions from attendees who are not candidates, requesting that questions be phrased in a minute or less, and that they be addressed so they can be answered by all of the candidates. So, do we have anyone who would like to ask a question of the candidates? Raise your hand or just let me know. And if we don't, I'll proceed to another question. Okay, so keep that in mind. You've got an opportunity. The next question is this. There is a concept of the possibility of, quote, must play, close quote, mandates, must play mandates to local stations from the Pacifica Executive Director and or the Pacifica National Board in order to help build up and develop the audience for certain programs and build up the Pacifica brand. With this concept, such a mandate might, for instance, be applied to a program like Democracy Now! Do you have an opinion whether this approach should be possible? So, James Sagerton, you can go first.
Thank you, Michael. As I understand the question, it's about must play. There are certain things that I think are okay to do a must play, such as, you know, announcements about legal matters or election matters, things that are critical to our following the bylaws and keeping ourselves on track. As to mandated programming from the national level, that's tricky, especially because we have so many competing groups within Pacifica, they're always trying to take over the control of the stations or the network and then transform it in their own image, which is part of what leads to all of the fighting, which is unfortunate. That's a sensitive question. We used to have a national news program at Pacifica National News. I'm in favor of restoring a Pacifica National News program. Of course, we'll have to make sure WBAI is involved in, I'll just finish my sentence, is involved in creating that so that, it's not, you know, it's not Pacifica across America, but it also reflects the viewpoint of people at WBAI. Thank you.
Thank you. Matthew Reese, are you here to answer the question? All right. Jack DePalma. You have to unmute yourself, Jack, to speak.
Thank you, Eleanor. Thank you, Michael. I believe there's a must play because every hour they have to say WBAI-FM. I believe more network consciousness, but cooperation would be nice. I think a lot of stations in the network are not as cooperative with the way we are with DC. I don't know about must play, but I think a lot of times when you start teaming up with other parts of the United States, other parts of the Pacifica network, you do a good thing, not a bad thing. However, I know that some of the stuff, as was mentioned, sometimes can be steered our way, onerous. I don't know. I don't want to say the wrong thing. I like local programming, but too much local programming has its own issues. I'm not necessarily. And I believe the part about the mission statement that was from the other question, Michael, is that we're supposed to be teaching people how to do radio drama. We're supposed to be teaching people how to be organizers, Nissan. That's part of the mission statement. We're supposed to use the radio station to create a political consciousness about diversity and democracy in the real world in America and peace in the real world in America. It's hard because we're only a radio station. We really can't become lobbyists, but you're lobbyists to the public in the interest of what Lou Hill was talking about. Much like John Dewey said, education is life itself, Jim. So thank you.
Thank you. Nissan Pitcher.
My apologies. Can you restate the question one more time for me?
The question involves a concept of must play. So the idea is a must play is something that would come from the top, from either the Pacifica Executive Director or the Pacifica National Board. It would be maybe done to help build up audience for certain programs or to build up the Pacifica brand. Now, with this must play concept, such a must play mandate might, for instance, be applied to a program like Democracy Now. All the local stations would be instructed to play it. Do you have an opinion whether this approach should be possible?
Should the approach that should the local station also be put must plays into effect? Because if the local stations, my understanding is like if the national already has a must play, have a must play, requirement, local boards can't really change that. Do I agree with the concept of a must play? That's another, if that's the question, then I wouldn't say I would agree with something that must be played, because I think every station needs to be able to free your voices. But I, as a member of the LSB, I don't see how we would be able to adjust or comment on what the national requirements are unless we have gained national power. So all I can say is what I can't say is we should focus on what we believe is important to be played and focus on the important essence of the content, because we need to fight for voices to be heard and the white voices to be heard. Even if they try to drown us out with other voices, all we can do is really work on speaking loudly and consistently as possible. And I want to work to do that. Thank you.
Thank you. Martha Rowan.
Yes. It seems obvious that there would be certain types of things like announcements that have to do with the national, network and things like that. But other than that, I think I'm very much against the idea of some kind of a top-down decision-making by the national board telling individual stations what particular programs they must play. Now, I think that's something that should be, there may be some interest in having certain types of programming that are maybe not required, but strongly encouraged. But I think that's something that has to be negotiated, by the stations. But no, I am not in favor at all of any kind of top-down, mandates about what kinds of programs have to be, what specific programs have to be played. I think that's, again, that's, to me, that's a freedom of speech issue.
Thank you. Jim Dingman.
I should add that Bruce Grief raised his hand. The must carry issue is a very important issue. The whole idea of analog radio and must carry shows like Democracy Now! Is based on the idea of having a well-funded show. Democracy Now! Has a budget of about, $10 million? So that's equal to the entire network. And the idea is to play shows like that at morning drive and afternoon drive to build up audience. That's the idea of a must play or must carry policy. Now that has changed. And that's one of the reasons why our inadequacy as a network is quite acute, because we should have moved and been a leader, a cutting edge leader in the digital revolution, which we have not been for the past 25 to 30 years. Otherwise we wouldn't be having these debates, because obviously it's important to aggregate audience by having must carry shows. And I am in favor of that. But on the other hand, you know, it's true that you get these issues where it collides with local grids. People get upset. Oh, who cares if they're doing this? Let MSNBC do it. And I think that that is a mistake, because Pacifica in the past was known for national shows in the 70s and 60s and 80s. And we should return to being able to do that kind of production. So yeah, must carry, I'm definitely in favor of those kind of policies, if they're done astutely and with intelligence. Thank you.
Thank you. MK Williams.
Coming. Okay. Well, as we all remember from October 2019, when WBAI was shut down and Pacifica Across America became our sort of standard canned programming, my objection to that is, you know, one of the things that having a listener-sponsored radio network allowed us to do was to push the envelope of radio itself. So one of the things that blew my mind when I first started listening to BAI was they would have 2 and 3 and 4 hour programs discussing the topic and, you know, really thoroughly getting into it and doing it in, and there were a lot of innovations that were allowed to come about. And if you curb the local spirit of innovation, you're going to just end up with canned programming. On the other hand, as Jim said, there are some financial incentives to some of this must carry stuff. For example, we covered the both political conventions partly because we got grants from unions to do that, you know. So and if you get a targeted grant saying, I'll give you this money if you do this, this, and this, you know, there's a strong incentive to do this, this, and this. But I do think it was a program that was of interest and was in line with our Pacifica mission to broadcast. And I do think it was a one-time thing, both of those events. So it's not like totally upending, you know, our programming priorities. But I think it's a slippery slope because, you know, you don't want to slip into payola. And that's sort of where I'm at about it. I think we'll know, I think, as we go along, is it censorship? Is it payola? What is going on here? Or is it just sharing? And if it's just sharing, one station innovates one thing and it becomes of interest to the whole network, then that would be a different matter and we could be able to hopefully recognize that.
Thank you. Tom Morata.
I'm very much for the idea. I think the National Pacifica Director is motivated and having a successful network so they could take the best of all of the 5 stations and promote them. I agree with Martha Rowan said it should be negotiated with the 5 stations, because what happens if all of the mandated programs are coming from one station? That wouldn't be that fair. But if it was like the best of each one of the 5 and, you know, and it was kind of evenly distributed, the best of each of the stations, I think would make all of the stations stronger. And I want to agree with what Jim Dingman said, that when we have collaboration on a major event and you have 4 or 5 of the stations together making a comment on a presidential address or a major event, I've heard these in the past and they really work beautifully. You have intelligent contributing people from throughout the network, and that's very successful on special events. So I'm very much for the idea, but it has to be done fairly and it can't all come from programs from one station. That wouldn't work.
Thank you. All right, Matthew Reese, are you here to answer a question? All right, I think we lost Matthew. So, do we have a candidate who here that we don't know about who didn't get a chance to answer that question that was just asked? All right, I think we know that. So, I think we've identified our candidates. So, I'll take a question from an attendee who is not a candidate. There was a suggestion. I thought that Bruce Grief had raised his hand with a question. I don't know. Did you, Bruce, were you seeking to ask a question? All right. Just to remind everyone, we are opening this to questions from attendees who are present, who are not candidates, asking a question of up to 1 minute. And it should be a question that's addressed to the candidates generally. So, and we have Daryl McPherson. Daryl, go ahead, please.
Thank you for taking my call, Michael. I'm still listening for someone who has a clear strategy to increase listenership and raise capital rapidly. Is anyone doing outreach to the programmers who have at least access to people with high name recognition that can promote the station on their social media channels? Does anyone have access to accountants, tax advisors, financial advisors to have WBAI and Pacifica listed as a choice for their tax write-off? Is anybody thinking or looking at a comprehensive campaign in which we get high school students and college students to promote the stations in their schools? Something like a speakers bureau in which we go into every school and we get them to give up some money. And then there's always research.
Thank you. All right. So Nissan Pitcher. Nissan, you have to unmute yourself. All right, we'll come back to Nissan in a minute. Jack DePalma.
I apologize. The idea that we're going to be able to, you know, call up brokers and bankers and, you know, insurance executives to help WBAI is fatuous. It's not a realistic. I understand what Daryl's asking, but it's not realistic that anybody with. I made a comment to a fellow at the bank that because he owns stock. And it's the same thing with me and my wife. Because we have our money in Citibank, we actually don't support radical behavior relative to the climate change. So if you say to somebody, oh, we're for Pacifica, please come and do our books for us for free and then give us $10,000, Daryl, it just doesn't when I first heard your question, I used to know high school kids. One of my original resume items was that I worked with a punk rock band in the 1980s, Daryl, and they're poverty stricken because they're punk rockers. They're poor kids live on the Lower East Side that had to deal with a mass murderer in the real world, because they're high school kids that I knew, Daryl, and they're not the stockbrokers and, you know, accountants that I know that wouldn't even consider. They don't listen to WBAI, Daryl. I'm sorry, Daryl. I wish I could help, but you nailed the problem in a nutshell. You know, let's get everybody to listen to WBAI and give us money. It's a great idea. Thank you.
All right. If Matthew Reese is here, please go ahead. All right. We'll proceed to James Sackerton.
Okay, The question was basically, does anybody have a plan to raise money fast? It's not really a get rich quick scheme that I have, but I've been encouraging for some time that we mine our own resources. We have archives that are recognized as invaluable. That's why we're getting $1 million and multi-million dollar grants in order to digitize and otherwise clean up our archives. We can license the materials to people who want to use it. Move productions, academic work, and books. Pardon me?
Go ahead. Whatever you can do to prevent breakup, which you were breaking up a bit.
Oh, okay. I didn't realize that was happening again. Okay. So, more practically, you know, we don't have a lot of resources or time right now to, you know, do a lot of fancy things. What we need to do is go to our own resources, our archives, our donor list. We have decades of donor contact information. We should be cultivating that. We should be going through it. We should be contacting our past and present major donors, our medium-sized donors, our small donors. We have to use what we've got and then to build on it. That's an emergency plan. To put some money to try some things.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Nissan Pitcher, are you available to unmute and answer?
Yes. Sorry about that. I'm tired and I've been interrupted because of some work thing. May mind repeating the question one more time? I'm sorry.
Well, I guess the question is a little bit difficult to repeat, but it's basically, does anyone have plans to really get moving and raise money?
Fantastic. Okay. So here's my plan. Okay. My plan is to, first, like I said before, I want to set up a technical advisory board, right? And I want to start with first modernizing our website and hopefully help us work on an app that could help us unify different platforms and different logistical information all in one place to, one, increase our efficiency because we're losing a lot out of inefficiency because we don't have the analytics and stuff correlated in order to know what the target area is or what the or how to keep track of monetary funds or any of that. So we revamped the system and also spread out to other networks in digital form, which would be, again, like YouTube and other social media platforms and whatnot, to extend into these other networks to bring them back to the radio, right? All under the preface of this app so that anybody involved can share in one aspect holistically with the radio. The third part of the strategy, right, is to create a new monetizing model similar to Patreon, right, which will be handled via this app. That way, everybody can partake in sending out sharing information and doing advertisements to all the other media, social media posts, or any other type of contact information like Telegram or, you know, even or email, whatever you like. That way we can spread the load to in a peer-to-peer system, allowing for much more communal ownership over the network and what is played, and basically taking all the resources that we have in a much more different way and bringing that to the community. That should increase our revenue tenfold because we have multiple sources of revenue, and with multiple sources of revenue, we have less of single point of failure.
I'm afraid I didn't hit the reset for this, but I think you've had enough time.
Yes, I'm done. Thank you.
All right, thank you. All right, Tom Morata.
First of all, Daryl, I think that's an incredibly good question. I don't know what date it was. It was, I think, on a Sunday. John McDonough, somebody that nobody's ever heard of, except for on BAI, a taxi cab driver, said something outrageously stupid. He was trying to make a point, but it was stupid, and somehow it was put on TikTok, and hundreds of thousands of persons heard of John McDonough. Oh, he's on BAI. Nobody ever heard of him. For 15 minutes, they knew John McDonough from BAI existed, all because he got on that platform. I think it was TikTok. So, one of his shows, going back maybe 4 or 5 weeks, I have to go to archives to check it, but all of a sudden, because he got on that platform one time, people heard of BAI. And that's an incredible thing. We have to penetrate the social media to where they know that we exist. And one of the things that Daryl suggested is college students and high school students. We have to find a way where we could legally and very acceptably get our information emailed to every high school and every college organization in the country. We could send them something, a copy of Democracy Now! And other things that we have that could be resources for them. It has to be presented to them in a very presentable way, that it's not, we're not trying to indoctrinate them, but we're trying to pass on information in a free society. But we have to use these social platforms to get people to know we exist, and again, reach every college organization and every high school organization, and present some of our information to them. And if we do that, all of a sudden these people will have heard of us, and if they sample Democracy Now! And some of the other programs, they might stick with us and say, well, hey, you know, they're following college protests, they're following this, maybe student debt or other things that we're doing, and all of a sudden will become something that exists in their mind. So I think those two parts of – thank you, Daryl, for the question.
All right, thank you. M.K. Williams.
Okay. Well, I wanted to just point out, Daryl mentioned in the chat that his question was about getting – not getting money from bank presidents and so forth, but getting CPAs, people, you know, who do people's taxes. And there's some pretty liberal guys. I know one in Park Slope that I would recommend to anybody here. you know, to use BAI, to list BAI as a potential tax write-off. My problem, you know, I do think we do need to mine the lists that we already have, and we do need to diversify into social media and podcasts. But some of the problems I've come across have been kind of the house that Jack built. You know, you can't do this until you do that, and you can't do that until you do this. And it just kind of bogs people down who have good new ideas. For example, when I first came on the scene, I was recommending legacy fundraising, going to, you know, seniors have to withdraw from their IRAs a minimum required distribution. Once you hit 71, you no longer have a say over your savings. You know, you have to start using them up. So one thing you can do to keep on earning some money from your savings is invest in an annuity, and a charitable annuity. And if we had if we can use Pacifica's 501c3, we can be listed as a charitable annuity. So, but then that requires a lawyer, and then that requires someone who's going to monitor that financial arrangement and monitor it correctly. So each thing requires, you know, we used to have a lot of staff who was able to do these things. And we had in 2013, everybody was told to downsize. We downsized, and not everybody did, but we did. And that's a part of our problem now.
Thank you. Jim Dingman.
All right. Well, first of all, we need to deal with the issue of how many people are owed premiums. If it's 6,000 or 4,000, all the members of the LSB plus people who are willing to sign non-disclosure agreements have to get in there and do what we did 10 years ago and just call people up and start working that out. I estimate that could easily be, if it's in the worst case scenario, we're talking about 60 to 75 40-day work weeks. So you need a lot of work to go in there and deal with that. But that would reap results because people would, first of all, be shocked that we're calling up to resolve it. And then, of course, eventually, while it is a situation where you got to spend money to make money, that is, you know, deal with all these old premiums that aren't gone, usually, in my experience, that can, you know, reap benefits financially. So that's a lot of work. That's, you know, that's the first thing. Second thing is, I would sit there and also get people involved in dealing with the City Council of New York. And the reason I'd say that is that, one thing that would solve a lot of problems, with the station is if we were able to get into a space like an abandoned elementary school or junior high school somewhere in the city and turn that into a community center. My experience that we've had at, 388 Atlantic Avenue is that whenever we've done events which bring in the public, it's amazing. It's amazing. Melissa used to cooperate with us, the landlord, and we used to get like 125, 150 people down there in that, cafe area. But stuff like that would return us to the question of having an organic relationship with the public, in the city of New York. And all these other things you talk about, bringing all these different, add-ons with, CPAs, et cetera. That would stem from a reset and rebuild and a renaissance and rebirth of WBAI. That's the key.
Right.
How to rebirth it in a whole different way that we can't even imagine right now.
Thank you. Martha Rowan.
Yeah, it's kind of hard to think of some, for me to think of some way to bring in a lot of money in a big hurry. I don't have contacts with people with a lot of money. So, but, I think Nissan's ideas, of an app and that would make it easy for people, for us to tie together our programming with podcasts and other kinds of, programming through on things like YouTube and, people's websites, TikTok, anything. I think that is really important. And I think in the medium or long term or even the short term, perhaps, it is really important that we diversify our programming to appeal to a wide range of audience. We've got I think we kind of have a very narrow focus on what kind of programming we have and what kind of audience we're looking for. And, I think if we have a wider range of an audience, we'll get a wider range of, a larger audience and a wider range of people who are interested, more engagement. I do like the idea of if it were possible to have that Jim Dingman was talking about, to have a space where we could have events that would bring in the public. And I also agree with the idea of reaching out to schools and educational institutions. If we think of WBAI as being a little bit like when newspapers like the New York Times would have either free or reduced rate subscriptions for students. If we think of WBAI as something like that, I think that's a good idea.
Thank you. All right. We will, in a moment, also be taking questions from people who are attendees who are not candidates, but right now the next question is this. So one of the things that has been presented as a campaign issue in this LSB election is the bylaw requirement that 30 minutes, that the public be allowed 30 minutes of time at every LSB meeting, every publicly held LSB meeting, to provide public comment. And, it has been suggested, LSB members, there are 24 LSB members, should, be responding when the public, presents public comment. So what is your stance on this campaign the issue that has been presented during this campaign? So that said, MK Williams, you get to go first.
I mean, gee, thank you. I remember the day when when I came on the scene, the locals, it wasn't called the local station board, advisory board, had been closed to the public for 13 years. Every session was an executive session. And we got that opened back up. But then when we finally got back into the meetings, the public comment going back and forth became, you know, a shouting match, you know, became some, the loudest voice would dominate the dialogue. And, you know, some people who wanted to say something could never get a word in edgewise. So I don't think people, I mean, every single tradition bylaw that we have came from someplace. It came from trying to fix something that was going off the rails. So I think we need to realize the history. Maybe if we had everybody on a strict time limit, what they could, you know, and if they had to direct their question to a particular, board member, not just in general to the whole board, and everybody had to answer, because then there wouldn't be enough time for the listeners also to get in and get heard.
All right. Thank you. Jim Dingman.
Well, it's a phony baloney issue. First of all, we have these town halls precisely to deal with that issue. And people decide to make town halls a partisan question, even hold them. That's on them. Whenever we've had town halls in the past, we encourage everyone to come, no matter who they are. And, you know, they can sit there and, you know, scream and yell and argue and have a great old time in giving their opinions in a way that they can't at an LSB meeting. Because the public comment period there for 30 minutes is essentially, yes, it is rigid. It sometimes can be criticized because it's too formulaic anyway. But if you start going back and forth, that can, you know, people are looking for the little gotcha moment, you know. And these town halls, this town hall function, you know, we've had many, many more town halls than are allowed in the 2-year mandate by the bylaws, precisely to communicate with the general public. And if the station decides not to advertise it, if it's not put on the website, there's just so much one can do. If other people decide they don't want to come, there's just so much we can do. So as far as I'm concerned, we definitely are in favor. I certainly in favor. And I know, frankly, all the people running on IndyCan, and I'm sure the JNC too, they want to have this kind of interaction with the public. It just is, I'm into unrestrained, unscripted, let's not have agitprop theater as our intro kind of interaction. I just want to hear what the public says. I don't want to hear and tell anybody what to do. I want to hear what they think is important, and that's it. So I think it's a phony baloney issue. Thank you.
Thank you. Martha Rowan.
Yes, I would be inclined to agree. I don't know whether I would necessarily use the term phony baloney, but I think it's a mistaken issue. First of all, it's impracticable because as Michael points out, there are 24 members of the board, and all you would need would be somebody to ask a question that expected each one of the members of the board to respond, and that would be the 30 minutes or almost. And obviously there are other, you know, Jim was talking about town halls. There are venues where there can be a dialogue between the board members and and the members of the public. But it says it's the public comment, not public question and answer. It's an opportunity for the public to make comments about issues that are important. Obviously, board members should be paying attention, taking notes, and thinking about it, and maybe responding in other venues where it's appropriate. But it's just not a practical, something that's practical to do, and I don't think necessary, because there are WBAI offers lots of opportunities for dialogue between the board and member and listeners.
Thank you. Tom Murata.
I think the idea for the public to have 30 minutes a month to comment is great, but they'd have to really structure it. As Martha just said, that you would not have to have 24 people comment on everything that was given by the public, but maybe just have a set ground rules, and then you allow three members of the board to maybe answer a comment by the public, but just have it so structured to where the time wouldn't be wasted. If it was really well thought out, where you can make a comment, one or two of our LSB people will comment on it, then next question, next question, next question. If it was structured well, I think it would work.
Thank you. James Sagerton. Do we have James Sagerton here? All right, James, we don't hear you if you're there. So with that, we will go to Matthew Reese if you're here. All right, with that, we'll try coming back, but Jack DePalma.
Remind me the question, Michael. I've been listening to everybody's answer. I tend to agree.
So a campaign, it's been presented as a campaign issue in this campaign.
Yeah, I remember. Should the LSB talk back to the questions? No, I think the listeners have a right to insult us all, kick the tires. You know, the saying goes, you can examine the car, you know, bring your own mechanic if you choose to. I think that's a very good thing, because I like to say what I think about WBAI to the LSB. The problem is the LSB doesn't listen. And what Tom said would be a great idea, if there could be a way that you could say, let one person be the spokesman, the other person be a spokesperson for this group, if there are factions on the LSB, I know there are. And, you know, you get 1 minute to respond, 1 minute to respond. The last 15 minutes is usually filled up after they kick the tires, after they told us what jerks we are, what we're not doing, what we should be doing. Then the LSB could say, oh, I'll take 1 minute to tell you what really happened. But that would be two-way creative is very difficult to establish in the real world, it seems, nowadays. Thank you. Everybody, what everybody said is true. It's impossible to take 20 people and say, oh, here's a question for all 20 of you. 30 minutes.
Thank you. Nissan Pitcher.
Yes. Yeah, so one of the things I see about this is, on a, you know, fundamental level, first, like the question of public comment, like does public comment, is a function supposed to be just for question and answers, or is the comment meant to get feedback directly from the public and to have a challenge directly there when, you know, the meeting happens? If it's serving as a check and balance function, then that would be incredibly important. I do think it's important for these meetings to be made public, for transparency. I am a big believer in transparency. But if the issue is simply a organizational or mediation function, then yeah, there should be a better, more efficient way of moderating that. And I think that requires a very skilled moderator as well. And they probably should be training for moderating different meetings. I see meetings all the time, and the meeting really goes depending how well of a moderator you have. So I think, again, So again, my stance would be, I am definitely for keeping the public in the meetings because that serves as a check and balance. But also, I do think if something's getting rowdy and out of hand, then that's the responsibility of the moderator to make sure the meeting is on track and make sure things are well underway. I don't think that's a public issue, but I think that's a management issue. And we should address that with better training and have talks on how we could structure it better. And that's why, and that would be my suggestion. My suggestion would probably use more of like sociology type of training and conducting of meetings. That is all.
All right. Thank you. So Matthew Reese, are you here to respond? All right. I would like to call on James Sagerton. He's sent a message that he's been disconnected and he can't get back in. I don't know why that is. We don't have a max. I don't think we have a max limit on the number of people in the meetings that's preventing it. I don't know why. Anyway, so all right. So. And there's no other candidate present that hasn't responded to that question, correct? All right. So we are taking questions from people present who are not candidates. And Eleanor Elizabeth Foreman, did you have your hand raised to offer a question?
Yes, I did.
All right. Would you like to present your question?
Okay, I would like each candidate to answer, it's a two-part question, actually. One question is, would you be for opening the chat to all? And two, would you be willing to commit to attending all meetings and voting at all meetings?
What was the last part of that? About
voting at all meetings.
I'm sorry, what?
Would you be willing to attend all the local station board meetings and vote at them? So that it's simply having your name up as being present would not be sufficient. You actually have to show that you're paying attention by voting throughout the meeting.
All right, very good. So, all right, Tom Morocco. Oh,
of course, if there is a true reason that one is unable to come, you're in the hospital, of course you can send an excuse with an explanation that would be available to all.
Okay. Tom Arata, you're first.
I want to agree with both of those suggestions. I think they're a good idea. I think it's like if you're going to be a part of the LSB, you want to keep it real. So attend and opening up the chat to everybody. I'm for both of those suggestions.
Okay. All right. Nissan Pitcher.
I wasn't too clear on the first part of the question.
The first part is, are you for having the chat open at
like the Zoom chat like we have now?
Yes, open to all.
I'm for open transparency, so yeah. That's and for the second part of your question, I mean, I kind of find it. Yeah, I wouldn't be part of the LSB board if I wasn't going to drop to the meeting. That's like trying to ask for a job and then getting the job and then not showing up to the job. So, I just from thinking one is I feel like there's already a commitment to attend as many meetings as possible and participate to the best of the ability. I think that should just be a standard. I don't. So I'm sorry if you have to ask that kind of question if people have not actually been doing the job that they pretty much campaigned to get. So that would just be like, yeah, I would say I have a commitment to getting the job done because I see this as an issue and a benefit to all. And I would like to do my best into helping you achieve that for the best outcome for all of us. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Jack DePalma.
I'm sorry, Michael. I was out of the room. Could you come back to me and ask the question again? Maybe I can hear it. Or I'll go to the end of the stack if it's okay.
I'd like to take candidates in order. So the question, it's a two-part question. The first part is, would you be willing to open the chat to everybody?
No.
At a meeting?
That's foolish.
And the second part of the question is, will, if elected, will you show up at meetings? And will you, moreover vote to, during the meetings to show your presence, with the caveat that, if you're hospitalized and can contact, people with an excuse that you're hospitalized, you don't have to show up.
All that is, I wouldn't be running if I didn't expect to be there, pay attention for the sake of WBI and Pacifica. The responsibility of being on LSB means that you care about Pacifica. It's a volunteer service. I wouldn't put anything less than attention to it. That's why I said I was out of the room. I apologize. I didn't quite hear the whole discussion. But the idea about the chat is really kind of strange. People will do everything in their power, Michael, to disrupt your good order of meetings. I've seen the people that consider themselves opposed to what we're doing. They're not here tonight. I wish they were. So we could have these fruitful debates about the future, about WBAI, the future of Pacifica. But strange it may sound, Michael, if we don't have some order, there's no benefit to Pacifica that we follow our bylaws or that we follow Robert's rules or et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. We're only as good as we agree to be for each other and for the best of ourselves. So I think the chat is a clear example of how people can and have disrupted LSB meetings and due order of good service to the process. Thank you, Mike.
Okay. Matthew Reese, are you joined with us? All right. And I think James Sagerton has not rejoined due to an inability to connect. So M.K. Williams. MK, do we have you? You have to, if we do have you, you have to, not sure what happened with MK. Okay. Jim Dingman.
Well, the chat issue is an interesting question. Of course, people can use the chat to raise hell, and so I have a mixed feeling about it. I've always attended these meetings, even though some of them can put you in the hospital, okay?
Yeah.
They can put you in the hospital, not you have to send a note saying you're in the hospital. And so, yeah, I just think if you're going to get elected and you're going to do something like run and be part of the PNB, you have to realize you're going to be given a 40-hour a week unpaid job. And so that's the issue that you have to face. Now, I wanted to make a comment about some question that Sue Johnson had posted in the chat. Do you believe that Pacifica and the station should be dominated by paid superior staff or by volunteers from our communities? It should be a collaboration of everybody, frankly. And that is always difficult to do. But yeah, in terms of the attendance, I'm all, you know, I try not to miss meetings. And, in terms of the chat, interesting question. I have, you know, splits about it, but thank you for posing it.
Okay.
Is the answer to that? Yes or no?
I think you got your answer. So, yeah, we don't, allow this kind of pressing on people. Martha Rowan, you're next.
Yeah, I was a little bit confused about the first part of the question myself. I at this point, I assume you mean the chat open to all members of the board, that it's not, it hasn't been in the past or something. I'm not clear.
Everyone present.
Would that include the public who was?
Most certainly.
I see. I think opening it to the public, especially at the beginning, maybe during the period when public comments are allowed, I think it would be a mistake to open it to the public while the meeting is going on. It depends on how, I mean, it would seem to me that especially if you opened it to the public, that you would have to have some kind of a moderator of the chat. It could get very, I can see how it could be disruptive. On the other hand, the chat can be useful. Another problem with the chat is that it's distracting. It's distracting while you're typing things and answering questions and making comments. You're not hearing what people are saying. On the subject of attending meetings, of course, that's it seems to me that's a given. You commit yourself to a job and you do it. Obviously, there emergencies occur, and I don't think one should need some kind of special notarized document to prove that they're, I think, sick or whatever. But, and as far as voting goes, I would assume that if something came up to vote on, that I would vote. I suppose there might be some situations where a member might want to abstain for some reason or another, but I think I would assume that in most cases, I would have an opinion and I would vote. So that's where
it's not whether you can abstain, but whether a person can put up on Zoom that they're present and then walk away and not respond to anything.
Let's not be argumentative with our
questions. Obvious, as far as I'm concerned, if you're present, if you are present, you're present. I mean, I have to admit that I've been a little bit confused when I started all these things that most people don't. Most Zoom meetings I've gone to have everybody is present. I'll put my image, but I see most people don't do that. And I guess that's it's easy if you do that to then go off and, you know, make yourself a cup of coffee and not pay attention to what's going on. But certainly, I think once you're there, you should be there. And I would be.
Thank you. I think M.K. Williams, who I called on earlier, is back. M.K., are you here?
Yeah, I'm sorry. I got thrown off the internet. I had to log back in, so that's what happened. Are we answering now? Could someone briefly summarize?
It's a two-part question. Would you be in favor of opening the chat up to everyone during LSB meetings? And it's been clarified that it would be for the entirety of the meeting. And it's been clarified that everyone means not just board members, but the public as well. That's part one of the question. And the second part of the question is, if you are elected, will you actually attend the meetings and show up? And furthermore, to show that you are there, actually vote during the meetings. With a caveat being that if you have to go to the hospital and send that as an excuse, you wouldn't be expected to show up.
Okay. Well, obviously, attending meetings is preferable to not attending meetings. This has been an issue every single board meeting since Eleanor, I think this question is from you, got on the board. And it might be confusing to you why people are so opposed to this issue. But if you go back to, you can in KPFTX, the last 6 months of 2022, look at the minutes from what was happening to their board. And then you're in the forum you attended just last night. Someone talked about how from KPFTX, how 9 members of their board were kicked off of their board. Now, how do you think that happened? It happened due to unexcused absences. And that's why we insist at every meeting that we pass a motion to excuse all absences. Because once the board has excused all absences, no one can come in later and say, well, we're going to kick this one out. We're going to kick that one out. We don't like that one, so we're going to kick that one out. And it was all done on the basis of unexcused absences. And that's where this came from. And that's where it will stay, as far as I'm concerned, as long as that's a threat. And it is a threat. That said, all that someone has to do, according to Robert's rules, is submit a request for excused absence. And it's not for the board to judge anybody else's excuse. I mean, you can't say, oh, well, that one was in the hospital, that's okay, but this one only went to the emergency room, so that really shouldn't be an excuse. I mean, you do not, that's an invasion of someone's privacy to know what's going on in their life, why they can't attend. And they shouldn't have to tell you that. All they have to do is let you know, and it should be as much in advance as possible that they're not going to be there. That's my opinion.
Thank you. All right. And I think James Sagerton and Matthew Reese are not here to answer the question. So, all right. It is 7:43. We'll probably go just a little past 8 o'clock. Next question. We advertise ourselves as free speech radio.
Michael, excuse me. Someone's hand is raised.
Okay. Question. Yeah. All right. We will be taking questions from attendees. Next question here is, we advertise ourselves as free speech radio. How do we reconcile or make that live alongside the fact that program choices are made and there is some curation of what is on our air? Now, 3 for instances. Ayn Rand used to be a weekly commentator on Pacifica. Tucker Carlson, after he was booted off Fox, where he had the highest rating of any news show, but simultaneously no advertisers, probably meets the mission statement's definition of a varied news source, not commonly heard voice. 3rd instance, some DSA members who launched an attack to remove Guns and Butter from WBAI's air described this as curating what was on our air, seeking to remove the program because it reported that George Soros was involved in financing political things. All right. Jack DePalma, you're first.
I think the people that think that way should pay for their membership to WBAI. I don't think that way, Michael. I think real censorship is real because they prevent you from using the library when they take books away. The original reason why, when I met you, I was very very glad to know you because you were concerned about them closing libraries and stealing buildings. Real estate, as Catherine O'Sullivan knows, in New York City is a real scam for the wealthy to push everybody around. The idea of what's fair and balanced is probably the most difficult thing about why curated information, sometimes not, gets kicked under the table or rightly accused of being right-wing whispering or bigoted code messaging. We can't allow that on WBAI. I hear certain callers, I know their names, I won't use their names. It's embarrassing to say this about people. Or other people that have called people names that just make you embarrassed that they're associated with Pacifica if they think that way. We can't let the station go into bigotry, go into racism, go into political authoritarianism. Nobody knows the right messages that belong on BAI except the people that we allow to use our airwaves. And that should be volunteer producers and people in the interest of the mission statement. And we have to teach people that peace is something that we have to value. Violence is not working. It never did work. And that's the only reason why I support WBAI. I don't support WBAI so Ayn Rand can, you know, tell us all about how important her life was. Thank you, Michael.
Thank you. Jim Dingman.
Well, look, you know, this has been a problem ever since this organization was started. It was handled quite intelligently in KPFA in the 50s when they would have commentaries allowed. And so someone like Caspar Weinberger was a person who made commentaries. William F. Buckley was a person who made commentaries. Now, personally, I don't think Tucker Carlson, I don't particularly agree with what he has to say. I think he's a propagandist, but then one person's propaganda is another person's truth. So in terms of allowing different opinions that are politically conservative, there's no party line. I mean, people think there's a great party line in the mission statement of Pacifica. There isn't. They decided to create a party line given the fact that there is no reasonable, exuberant redundancy of outlets for people to express themselves in alternative media in the United States. And that's a general problem. And that's why people clamor for gaining airtime and never leaving it, even though nobody listens to them. So yes, I'm all in favor of having conservative voices on the air. I always have been. You want debate, you're going to get debate. Does that mean that we then surrender to some idiot who wants to defend dogs and cats being made into food in Ohio? Yeah, I'd like to hear somebody do that. And I'd like to have somebody sit there and refute him and call him the jerk that he is. I mean, debate is essential for people to think. And the problem in the stations in general throughout the United States is their idea of debate is a curated debate. And I will admit, as being a producer, I curate. Everybody curates. The question is, how do you then bring in dissonant information doesn't agree with your assumptions to, quote, be curated? And that's where the problem is in terms of our audience. Our audience is pathetic in all the stations, and that is one of the reasons, as far as I'm concerned, why that is the fact. This kind of question not being intelligently thought through.
Thank you. M.K. Williams.
Okay, I just want to ditto what Jack DePalma said, that basically if someone's saying something, say, about George Soros, I think there needs to be, if it's factual, it's out there, it's part of what exists. And you know, like Judge Judy says, if you tell the truth, you don't have to have a good memory. As long as it is true, it should be on BAI's air. There should be someone else who says, and by the way, that's his right, if he wants to donate to political causes. You know, so, you know, it's as long as you have a point and counterpoint, you know, if you want to talk about someone eating cats in Ohio, you know, then talk about, then you need someone on who's going to quote the city manager and quote the mayor, not the mayor, the city manager and the governor of the state. And you need to maybe have someone on who's going to talk about, you know, even though these were legal immigrants, is there some kind of official human trafficking going on that they were brought in to do labor that they couldn't find anyone else to do? You know, I mean, there are issues that are also true, that are uncomfortable facts that we need to not censor. So I think that the conversation quality, you know, will be evident, and someone should be around to, you know, that's why I think one programming director is maybe not enough. I mean, I do think that a programming council or a programming committee that does reflect different points of view, it would be the best venue in which to debate these things.
Thank you. Nissan Pitcher.
Yeah. So the idea, well, I'm going with Jim Demas here, of Joation is not really a sound argument. It's not really logically consistent because everything that's being presented is in some way curated. I mean, if WBI is about lifting up voices, unheard voices, that's a type of curation. So this is a mute argument to me. It's more of a way of trying to shut down conversation than it is to actually make a persistent argument or a logically consistent, you know, powerful. What I think needs to, what I think is we need to find ways of extending discussion in different realms and finding ways of making that accessible to as many people as possible, having enough voices as possible. Because the only way of, you know, keeping, you know, bad speech at bay is with more speech. Just like any way of beating a bad idea is having more good ideas and having honest debate. And just like flat earthers, right? Flat earthers was a small community that gained more community because they were censored and because there's not enough people arguing, making the argument against why flat earthers is not objective in their findings because it's why it's bad science. There's some people that have some very bad ideas and there's some people that have are more intelligent ideas, but you can't filter out what is right from wrong or what's good from bad unless you see both sides of the equation and actually have that intelligent conversation. Some people are not willing to have that. That's a pity. They want to play on teams and get to tribal, but we have to learn how to go above that and learn how to raise our consciousness and awareness and want to strive to be
fine
in a better place. Thank you.
Thank you. Tom Morata.
Yes, I'm very much for free speech radio, for allowing all those voices to be on the air and let them sink or fall on their content that they bring. And if people want to respond to it, they could either respond to it on their shows or on other shows. But I am all for the idea of letting differing voices. And Guns and Butter, that was a tremendous loss. It would be great to have them back on the air again.
Thank you. Martha Rowan.
Yes, I think my position is probably obvious what it's going to be. Absolutely, we need to have as wide a range of ideas and opinions as possible. The idea of curation, whatever that actually means, makes me very nervous. If it means, for example, the subject of the whole eating cats and dogs or whatever it is, the whole issue in Springfield, Ohio. Are we going to assume that the truth is coming from the city manager who has political interests in making statements that he makes? Or are we going to think the truth might be coming from the many people who spoke at the public meeting talking about things that they were concerned about and that they say that they had seen? This is the kind of thing that people have to work out, and the more voices you get to hear as far as opinions or as far as even facts, the better. So I am other than to make sure that nothing illegal or defamatory is being said, no, the idea of curation is anathema to me.
Thank you. All right, I want to check in whether we have either Matthew Rees or James Sagerton back in the meeting. I don't think we do. So, and I don't believe there's any other candidate who has not been asked the question. So we have someone with a telephone number ending in 8963, and you have your hand raised. Do you have a question to express in up to a minute that can be answered by all the candidates?
I do.
Okay.
Yes. Please. Last year, we almost fell short of the number of votes needed to qualify as a valid election. I want to ask if the LSB candidates are willing to impress their influence to the general manager and the program manager to allow for a two-hour election special this week, comprised of a debate and the voice of the LSB candidates speaking about the importance of the members voting. In addition to that, would you give your influence to encourage that a special card be created to encourage, strongly encourage, the WBI members to vote so that we can avoid being disqualified for not having the correct percentage? So I'm asking, would every single one of the candidates that are currently on the line be willing to contact the general manager and the program manager to encourage that?
Thank you. Jim Dingman.
Absolutely. That's important. And, you know, the key thing is that, look, I've been involved with the election process for 30 years now. I've seen basically managers and program directors have great chagrin towards even allowing this process to happen. People forget that when, as soon as this new system came into being, people were reacting negatively to it because they felt, my God, we can't control what these people have to say and vote. So yeah, I'm 100% in favor of that. Yeah, I would certainly be willing to make phone calls to both those folks to argue that, and we'll see whether they do it or not. But yeah, I'm agreeing with
that. Thank you.
Nissan Pitcher.
Well, that's simple. I would say yes and yes. I am a fighter for democracy, and I believe it's the duty of candidates and anybody in any type of position to run for any kind of office to promote, you know, whatever they can to not only a fair election, but also to inspire people to participate in the system, because the system don't work if people don't participate in it. As a leader, it's your job to inspire and get people to be active. So I just feel that that's the core part of the job. And as an organizer, I've done that already, and I have a long track record of fighting for democracy and helping with elections and stuff. So, yeah. Thank you for the question.
Okay. M.K. Williams.
I need to ask for a clarification of the question. Are you asking whether we have, like, an exception for people who can't afford $25 or 3 hours of volunteer?
I'm simply asking, since we are coming towards the close of the election and we haven't had that happen yet, we haven't had a special card as they did last year to implore the members to vote because we almost lost right at the end. We almost didn't get enough the percentage we needed to qualify for a ballot election. So can we get that cracking now? And I think that it would be very influential if the local station board candidates really chimed in on it, because I know I'm doing that now, and I'm encouraging other members to do that.
So if we don't meet quorum on this election going on right now, we don't want those people who have voted, we don't want those votes to be disqualified in some way?
Well, I think you already know from last year, you're a person that's active in LSB. Last year, the people that vote, that's fine, that's excellent, but there weren't enough of them. We almost didn't reach quorum. If you recall, Linda and other people had to send cards out constantly for the last week up to the actual last day in order for us to reach quorum. I think you remember that. Your voice sounds similar. You've been there last year.
Yeah,
so now that we're coming to the close again, are you willing to call, email, or do whatever in order to impress upon the program and general manager that we would like to see that done? I would like to hear you guys on a really, a night like tonight. You can speak about what you want to offer as a candidate, and you can also implore that the listeners vote, because it's very important for us to qualify during the election period, that we need a certain percentage of votes.
And maybe, So maybe we need to get up a team to go in and call people who call listeners, I mean, who are members.
And if you haven't called the general manager, the program manager, if you haven't done it already.
All right.
That's what I'm asking.
I don't reconcile this for you. Can you just give us brief yes or no, MK?
Yes, absolutely. They should do outreach efforts to get people to vote.
Okay. Jack DePalma.
I fully understand the question, and I would just point out that what she's recommending is a longstanding issue with people that don't quite understand how it works, that you have a democratic radio network where you get to vote for people that sit on an LSB who get to recommend or to oversee and make comments. Now, I will tell the caller that I don't have the ability nor right nor interest to call up the general manager, the program director, and say anything that you said, because that would be intrusive and obnoxious on my part. If I'm not even on the LSB right now, I'm just a candidate. But I can understand how, as a listener, how I have always encouraged, when I was on the election committee, I encourage people should vote. Not reaching quorum is a problem. A meager 15% of the 6,000 people is a problem. You could give as Kay just pointed out, you could give them the freedom to vote for nothing. And it's a problem because nobody votes. It's like they don't even listen to the radio station and give us $25. They brag about it sometimes, the callers, my friend from the Bronx. So the simply fact is that understanding how democracy works in Pacifica is like a mystery box, and they're all trying to unravel it. And I would never call to the caller. I would never call up the general manager, the new general manager or the new program director, ID and PD. And say, oh, I'm sorry. I think you should do this. You're right. They should do this. Get quorum. Everybody should encourage quorum. They should play carts every half hour, every hour. Please vote in the WBAI election if you're a member.
All right. Tom Morata.
Against the 2-hour special to advertise the election, I am for more reminders every hour on the hour. Actually, in self-interest, I would actually not want to hurry up the vote until I realize our campaign material got to the people we wanted to get it to. So I wouldn't mind it falling behind a little bit until our information got out. Then I would like to see the vote encouraged. But right now, I think letting it go slow was a good idea. I want to get our information out. When it reaches voters, then have them vote. And then that's just very selfish of me, but that's the way I feel.
Thank you. Martha Rowan.
Yeah, I don't quite understand. A 2-hour special seems to be something not very practical at this point. But I don't really necessarily see that there's a problem with contacting the station manager. I don't know that I would call, but I might send an email, and I would do my best to be diplomatic and polite about it. But perhaps this is something they already have in the works. And I would just encourage them that I hope that they're going to do that. But it is important. I mean, if the election ends up being null because we don't get enough voters, that's a huge problem.
Thank you. So I believe we've had everyone answer that question. Well, actually, I'll just check in. No Matthew Reese here, right? And James Egerton has also not rejoined. Okay. So we are now a little after 8 p.m. It's always advised, I understand, to leave them hungry for more. And that brings up the fact that there will be one last town hall candidate forum that we'll be holding. We'll get to it the same way next Sunday, again at 6 p.m. And I need to say that the views expressed here are those of the candidates, not of the radio station or Pacifica Foundation. And the sponsorship of this debate is not an endorsement of any of the candidates. So I want to thank you all for attending as candidates and attending as listeners and providing questions. That last question was an interesting one that verged on one of the questions that we might have gotten into, which is, should we be spending more or less of our airtime on public governance issues and or perhaps doing it differently, but that will be for another day. So thank you all, and
record.